People tell stories all the time. But if you're a detective, the trick is knowing who to believe. Let's say it's a woman calling in. She sounds scared. She tells you she's got this friend who just showed up at her front door in hysterics. Her friend said she was out last night with her boyfriend. They were driving around. He kept reaching for something in the back seat. It was just an ordinary bucket, her friend said. But when she looked inside, she found a human head. In true crime, investigation and conviction may take years. But every detective knows that the crucial clue is always there, somewhere, in the first 72 hours. Vancouver police detectives have just been told a strange story about a severed head in a bucket. They don't know what to make of it.
When I talked to my partner about this initial information, you're always somewhat skeptical because we often get phone calls in the homicide office and people claiming pretty outrageous things. And then there's no evidence to support it.
Was it a crank call? Vath and his partner, Detective Rick Crook, decide to find out. They pay the caller a visit. Her name is Susan Farland. She's divorced, living at home with her mother, and coping with mental illness.
She told us up front that she was bipolar.
The detectives know that people with bipolar disorders often experience dramatic swings in mood and perception.
My partner and I were both familiar with the disorder, but at that point we weren't prepared to write off the story.
The detectives ask Susan to give a full account of what her friend saw.
She was articulate. She was quite intelligent. She started telling a story which contained a lot of detail.
Susan says she and her friend Leanne sometimes hang out at a local club. Leanne is the one who told Susan about the head in the bucket. Leanne's boyfriend Michael is always there. Michael is a drug dealer with a reputation for violence. Not long ago, Susan met a new guy named Vagar. He seemed nice enough, but he also seemed to have a serious drug problem. Susan tells detectives that the day after Leanne's hysterical visit, she showed up at her door again. This time, with Michael. Michael knew Leanne had told Susan about the head in the bucket. He insisted that she come for a drive with them. Susan was afraid to go, but even more afraid of what Michael would do if she didn't. They drove to a garage. Once inside, Susan met someone she recognized, a friend of Michael's named Jim.
It seemed obvious to her that they were cleaning up after themselves.
Susan says Michael became angry. He told her he wanted to make sure she understood what happened to people who betrayed him. Susan says she knew the face. It was Vagar, the guy she met at the club a few weeks before.
She saw the face, and it wasn't until later, I think, that the full impact of this hit her and started to take effect on her.
Susan is terrified of what Michael will do if he finds out she's gone to the police. She doesn't want to say any more. But the detectives need to know what happened next. She says that Michael wanted to store the head in her garage.
She didn't know what else to say, so she said, yeah, you can do that.
Susan says she was scared to say no. Michael seemed to be telling her what to do, not asking.
It was moved to her garage overnight.
Susan says she was worried she might be implicated in the crime. That night, she couldn't sleep.
In the morning, Susan told Leanne and Michael, this has to be gotten rid of.
Susan was too afraid to even talk to Michael when he came by the house. That was 3 weeks ago. She's been trying to work up the courage to call the police ever since. They still aren't sure they believe her.
If we are going to launch into a large investigation, are we working on an investigation of a murder? Or is this fiction? We had to prove her story.
Bath and Crook begin a database search of the names Susan has given them.
She supplied quite a number of claims that we could then go and start to investigate to see if there was any validity to her story.
Police discover that Michael Illis is a known drug dealer. He does have an associate named James, or Jim, Thompson. Susan told police it was Vagar's head she saw in the bucket. When police enter his name, it too produces a hit. Vagar Cushman is known to police and has a history of drug-related charges. There's something else about him that backs up Susan's story.
He had gone missing, reported by his family, around the time that she talked about having seen his head in a bucket.
We were starting to become a little more convinced that perhaps there was something to this.
72 hours after hearing a story about a head in a bucket, police discover a missing persons report. If the two occurrences are connected, they have a murder on their hands. Vancouver police detectives know that if Susan Farland's story is true, a man named Michael Illis has likely committed murder. Illis is a Hungarian national. He has been deported from Canada several times, but he always returns. He's currently in custody and awaiting deportation. Before they go to see Illis in jail, detectives decide to have a talk with his associate, Jim Thompson. Thompson is working as a bouncer at a downtown club. Police ask what he knows about Michael Illis and a head in a bucket. Thompson doesn't cooperate. All he says is he and Illis are friends. But the detectives think Thompson knows more than he's letting on. Susan Farland said she saw Thompson at the garage the day Illis took her there. The detectives now ask if Susan can recall anything else from that day. She remembers Thompson cleaning the seats of a van. Police next learned that Thompson recently sold a van.
It showed up in a sales lot in the Lower Mainland, and we were able to recover it from that sales lot.
Police Constable Trevor Crocker is asked to perform a forensic analysis.
They wanted me to do a full rundown on the vehicle, which was photographs, a fingerprint examination, and specifically an investigation for the presence of blood inside the vehicle. My technique for the presence of blood is called a hemostix. The chemical strip is yellow, and if it turns green, it shows the indication of the presence of blood.
Crocker finds traces of blood inside the van. Police now need to determine if it's the blood of the missing man, Vagar Cushman. Investigators know Cushman's home is in Calgary. If police there can find personal items which contain traces of his DNA, it could be compared with the blood from the van. Calgary police send a number of Cushman's personal belongings to Vancouver, including a weightlifting glove. Lab tests show that the skin cells found inside the glove match the DNA found in the van. Police now have proof that Vagar Cushman was in the van, but no proof that he's been murdered. Police are keeping an eye on Jim Thompson. When they wiretap his phone, they learn he is helping the detained Michael Illis run his drug operation from prison.
Their basic method of operation was to take large quantities of marijuana down across the border and bring cocaine back across the border to sell it here in Canada.
Police also place undercover cops close to other Illis associates. But in monitored conversations, no one mentions anything about a murder. Investigators decide to enlist Susan's help in a new plan to get to Michael Illis. They set up another wiretap between Susan and Illis's girlfriend, Leanne.
Susan told her that she was upset by what it was that she had seen, and that she was contemplating going to the police with that information. Illis's girlfriend told her not to do that, and he said she would call her back. After Illis's girlfriend had the conversation with Susan, she immediately contacted the prison.
The detectives are hoping that a frightened Leanne will talk to Michael Illis about the murder. But Leanne is one step ahead of them.
She told him that they had to get married. It was obvious by his response that he was surprised by this. He basically heard from her that she would explain everything to him once the wedding happened and they could talk freely without the police listening.
Leanne is clearly onto the police. But why insist that she and Illis get married? Detective Crook has a theory.
The purpose would be that if she was his wife, then now she would not be compellable as a witness against him on a charge of first-degree murder.
The wedding takes place 2 days later in the prison chapel.
They were given the opportunity to speak to each other after the ceremony. We wanted to listen to the conversation that they were going to have. And when there was very little conversation overheard in the wiretap, we were curious enough to see what was happening. And it was obvious at that point they had chosen that time together to consummate the marriage.
But the newlyweds never mention murder. For police, time is running out. They need to find some physical evidence before Michael Illis leaves the country. The police aren't the only ones worried Illis will get away. Susan Farland has seen firsthand what he's capable of. She worries she may be next.
Susan was aware of the fact that he had been deported a couple of times before and yet still had returned to the country. So she was still concerned for the fact that although he was going to be kicked out again, he would come back and there would be some retribution for her. In that respect, we were under a time clock trying to put a case together for murder where we didn't have a body.
Michael Illis is scheduled for deportation to Hungary in 10 days. His associate, Jim Thompson, isn't talking. Police have no body. If they can't come up with something soon, Illis could get away with murder. Vancouver detectives believe drug dealer Michael Illis has committed a brutal murder, but they don't have the evidence to prove it. And Illis is set to be deported in 10 days. To make sure he stays in Canada, police decide to charge him.
He's now been charged with first-degree murder, and we are still trying to find the victim's body to support that charge.
The detective's next move is to lean on Illis's associate, Jim Thompson. either he agrees to cooperate with the police or he risks an accessory to murder charge.
We spent in excess of 10 hours with him here in the police station. He wasn't necessarily overwhelmed by the evidence that we had against him.
The detectives feel they have no choice but to offer Thompson a get-out-of-jail-free card.
We decided that we would propose a deal, and it was as clear and simple as telling him, if you talk, you walk.
In exchange for immunity, Thompson agrees to tell police everything he knows about what happened to Vagar Cushman.
The associate told us that it was his intention to go to a movie with the victim. Hillis decided that he would join them at the last minute. And they were down on the west end of Vancouver. As they pulled around the corner, the interior light of the vehicle was on. Hillis asked the victim to turn it off. At the point that he reached to turn off the interior light of the vehicle, there were two shots fired. At that point, Hillis used the lever, the side of the seat, to drop the victim down below the profile of the windshield.
Thompson says Hillis then ordered him to drive to the garage.
The garage was quickly used to hide the van and the body until such time as Hillis got control of the situation and what he was going to do with the body.
Hillis told Thompson to clean the van. Hillis said he had his own work to do. Vagar Cushman was murdered. Thompson says that Vagar was new to the business. He was skimming drugs to support his own habit. When he shorted one particularly important client, it proved to be a fatal error in judgment.
That group came to Hillis and said, one of your guys has made a mistake in delivering drugs to us. And given him the ultimatum of saying, either look after it, or we'll look after your entire group.
The severed head was Illis's way of proving the problem had been taken care of. The police finally know what happened to Vagar Cushman, but they need more than that to make their case against Michael Hillis. Thompson says he didn't see the head or body again until a week later, when Hillis insisted on his help. Hillis wanted to bury the body parts and cover them with lime. He thought lime would help accelerate the body parts' decay. Thompson says he and Hillis then drove north to a remote forest near Squamish. Thompson thinks he can remember the exact spot.
The associate was able to take us to exactly the area that the head had been buried, and he was able to say it's somewhere within this area that was about 50 by 150 feet.
Once again, the detectives are running out of time. A judge in Vancouver is scheduled to review the evidence this afternoon. Without a body, there is no case. Thompson leads the detectives toward a small clearing. He stops and tells them he's sure this is the spot.
We scraped, after several times, one layer away, and a tuft of hair came up.
In a shallow grave, the police finally find what they're looking for, the head of Vagar Cushman. It is almost perfectly preserved. If Michael Illis had wanted a speedy decay, lime was definitely not the way to go. It's a preservative.
He put lime with the head in order to accelerate things. It's a mistake. Normally, it's lye that someone would use for that.
Police can now corroborate Thompson's sworn statement. Michael Illis killed Vagar Cushman with two shots to the back of the head.
Our case against Illis had improved 100%.
Michael Illis believed strongly in the use of fear and intimidation, particularly against people he perceived as weak.
He actually felt that if he showed Susan the head in the bucket, that she would feel that she was implicated in this murder and be less inclined to go to the police to tell the story.
Illis just couldn't see someone like Susan Farland ever going up against him. But in the end, she was the first one who did. Eventually, Jim Thompson followed suit, providing police with the evidence they desperately needed. Both Susan Farland and Jim Thompson have started new lives in a witness protection program. Michael Illis is serving 25 years without parole for the crime of first-degree murder. The stories on 72 Hours are true. The detectives and forensic scientists are the ones who actually worked on the case.